This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're going to be talking about benefits for people with disabilities provided by the Social Security Disability Laws and the Workers' Compensation Laws. My guests are James Shea, a specialist in Social Security Disability Laws, certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. His office is in Los Angeles. My other guest, who is still in Los Angeles, is Scott Ford, a specialist in workers' compensation laws, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. He's a partner in the Los Angeles law firm of Ford and Wallach. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Additional funding of the program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Scott and Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate being here.
Scott, can you hear us?
Thank you, Chuck.
Hey, great to have you here. Scott, would you do this? Would you briefly kind of bring us up to date on the workers' compensation system, and then we're going to talk about how both the Social Security disability system and the workers' compensation system work together?
Sure. And once again, Chuck, thank you very much for having me on the program. Well, I think one of the first things I like to talk about when I talk about workers' compensation is the fact that people understand that workers' compensation is a no-fault system. It's basically been around since 1913. And in 1913, it was known as the Great Compromise, where injured workers gave up their right to sue their employers in civil court in exchange for a no-fault system. And since it is a no-fault system, what the benefit to the employer in this Great Compromise was that it's a reduced benefit delivery system. So in other words, what you're entitled to collect as workers' compensation benefits is significantly less than perhaps you might be able to collect in a claim of negligence and tort, such as in an automobile accident. And with that being said, I think we have to start every conversation of workers' compensation understanding that workers' compensation may not be the entire solution. It may not be the entire fix to the problems that you have. And in my opinion, someone who has a workers' compensation claim that turns into a career-ending injury that, that affects their ability to go back to work again has to go down the road further to start with Social Security disability, because that's a system that can take over for some of the limitations in workers' compensation to continue a person for the rest of their life.
Would you do this for us, Scott? I understand, and I have not practiced workers' compensation law, but my understanding is there, and if you would elaborate on this a little bit, that under certain circumstances under the workers' compensation system in California, there is a 104-week cap. What does that apply to, and what does that mean?
That's a great question, Chuck. And basically, there are two indemnity benefits that go to injured workers and workers' compensation. The first is called temporary total disability. That's a wage loss replacement benefit. You can't work because of an injury. You've just had a surgery. You're entitled to two-thirds of your average weekly wages, not taxed, until you recover from the injury. The second benefit is called permanent disability. That's a benefit that compensates people after their condition reaches maximum medical improvement, and that's to basically take care of them for the rest of their life. The temporary total disability benefit is the one that you're referring to. So if you have an injury and you're unable to work and you're looking to get wage loss replacement benefits, those benefits will last a maximum of 104 weeks. So in other words, there's a 104-week hard cap to receive those benefits. So even if, say, you've had a catastrophic injury and you've needed five or six surgeries, and 2 years have gone by since the beginning of your claim, and you're still treating and you're still unable to work, those benefits by law stop at that point.
So what does someone in that situation have available to him or her? It sounds like nothing in the workers' compensation system. So what's the next step?
Well, at that point, when your temporary total disability benefits cease and your case has not been settled and you don't have any funds available to you through the workers' compensation system because you haven't been put in a position where your injuries have been deemed maximum medically improved and that you can enter into a settlement agreement, you're basically found in a situation where you don't have any funds coming in. And that's the point, or actually prior to that point, I think when you make the realization that you're not going to be able to go back to work, people have to start thinking about Social Security disability as a way to continue those benefits and to avoid a gap in time when they don't have anything coming in.
If you would then clarify this, and then I'm going to turn to Jim Shea with regard to Social Security disability. If someone has a permanent disability, as I understood you saying, Scott, there are benefits that are available through the California Workers' Compensation Program. Am I right on that or not?
You are correct. Although permanent disability is what we determine, what we call basically the money or the compensation that people are afforded based upon their residual disability at the end of the case. So someone might have a permanent disability finding of 1% disability, which may pay them as little as $6 or $90, or they may have a permanent disability finding of 99% disability, which may pay them in excess of $200,000 in payments over time. So depending on your level of permanent disability, it depends how much you'll get and how long you'll get the money for.
Let me turn to you, Jim, at this point. If someone, obviously, it sounds like someone who has a disability, the issue to me becomes if benefits under workers' comp is going to end at some point, let's say 104 weeks is the maximum, what is that person going to expect to do if there is still a disability and he or she can't work as far as the Social Security disability system is concerned?
Well, I'd like to start that by making the distinction that I work for people who have become unable to work for lots of reasons, not just because of some sort of work-related
problem. Yes, I see. Okay.
In fact, when I look at a person who is collecting temporary disability benefits for 2 years, I think to myself that that person's a little bit lucky. At least they have a source of income for a 2-year period of time. I have many clients that are too ill to work and who apply for Social Security disability and who find that Social Security disability is hard to get. Something like 2 out of 3 applications are denied. And once denied, the only route to getting benefits that makes any real sense is through an appeal process.
In the Social Security system?
Yes.
Okay.
Which will take a minimum of 1.5 to 2 years to get through. So for 2/3 of the people who believe they can't work and apply for Social Security disability, 2/3 of those applicants are probably going to take the better part of 2 years before they see anything at all.
Well, this to me looks like it could be a financial catastrophe for people if they are not, if they don't have a lot of money in a bank account or savings or whatever, if they are not, if they're going to have to spend 2 years trying to get approved or accepted by the Social Security system, this is potentially a disaster.
Absolutely correct. I think what Scott is pointing us to is that for individuals who are receiving temporary disability benefits as a result of a work-related illness or injury, mm-hmm. that those folks, especially if they have concluded they are not going to be able to return to work, should probably think of applying for Social Security benefits, disability benefits, before their temporary disability benefits run out.
How soon would you suggest in terms of really protecting yourself adequately, would you suggest that people should start applying for Social Security disability?
Well, let me butt in for a second.
This is Scott. Go ahead. Yeah,
and,
please,
and
if you would.
Jim, you can answer this. This is Scott talking. You cannot file for Social Security disability benefits the first day you're off of work. There's a time limit in which to do that. So that potential clock in terms of waiting doesn't start. And maybe, Jim, you can answer that. How long do you need to be off work before you can even make an application for Social Security disability?
Well, technically, you could file the day after you stopped working, but you would certainly be denied if you did.
Mm-hmm.
The first 5 months of disability are what Social Security calls a waiting period. Nobody who is approved for disability benefits gets paid for those first 5 months.
So that's on the injured person.
Yes.
Completely.
Well, they are expected to use up any available state disability benefits or workers' comp benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Also, any disability that's going to qualify an individual for Social Security benefits has to last or be expected to last no less than 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of this is that, generally speaking, Social Security will deny an application that is filed during that first five-month waiting period.
And this is Scott again. Let me just add a point to that, too, in that, you know, unless someone has a catastrophic injury, most people come to see me and come into my office have the intention of returning to work. And often it's not until you're in the process, you've had a surgery and you have not received the recovery you were hoping for, or that you're not getting better as you expected, that the light bulb goes off in some people's minds where they say, you know what, I don't think I'm going to be able to go back to this job, and in particular, I may not be able to go back to work at all. And that's the point when people start thinking about what's the next step. And in my experience, that doesn't happen soon. That happens later in the process.
How much
sometimes
later?
That's,
how
that's
much
the
later?
Best thing we can do to advise them.
Scott, how much later have you seen this happening on the average?
You know, in my experience, it's usually at a year or 2 years.
Really?
I'd having this idea that they're not going to go back to work. I have some clients who, you know, work is part of their identity, and it's very important to them. And they struggle to get treatment. They struggle to get treatment approved. And they want to get back to work. And they try and keep a positive mental attitude. And sometimes it takes that moment in time where someone comes to the realization that, you know, I'm not going to be able to return to work. And that's when that light bulb goes off.
I would like to underscore that, too, if I may.
Please.
I would say that 99% of the people that I see and 100% of the people that I represent would rather be anything else but disabled. And as Scott has pointed out, I have seen people coming into my office 2 years after they've had to stop working, and I ask them, well, you know, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? File for workers' comp. Think about something else. And they tell me, oh, because I expected to go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a very common thing that people think. Nobody expects to be disabled, and nobody wants to be disabled.
What percentage, Jim, of your clients on the average, by the time they realize how difficult this is, how many of them have faced very severe financial, what percentage have faced very severe financial problems, would you say?
Well, of the folks who don't have the benefit of the workers' comp payments to sustain them,
yes,
I would say at least half, maybe three quarters.
Really?
I say half because many people don't have a spouse or someone else in the family that's working, and they're doing entirely without any kind of income.
Scott, I would agree with Jim 100% and say that I think the majority of people in both systems suffer tremendous financial hardship. And one of the issues that we haven't yet talked about that I think is important is that when someone starts off with a workers' compensation claim, they're making a claim that they have a disability or an impairment that's related to work. And what happens is often people have a disability or impairment that's related to work, and they have disability and impairment that's not related to work, that's either a pre-existing condition or a contemporaneously occurring condition, so that in their workers' compensation claim, they may not be entitled to their full benefits because the employer is only responsible for the part of the disability that the employer causes. So that's often when I want to refer someone to someone like Jim to say, look, this person has got significant disability, but only a portion of it is related to work, and they can't collect the portion that's not related to work in terms of resolving their case.
Let me just interrupt both of you for just a moment. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing this program live on July 6th. And we're talking about benefits for people with disabilities provided by the Social Security disability laws and the workers' compensation laws. For those of you who listen to the live program, in just a few minutes I will give you our toll-free number and you can call in and ask questions. If you tune in a little bit late, here are my guests. Scott Ford is a specialist in workers' compensation laws certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. My other guest is James Shea, a specialist in Social Security disability laws certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. A question was brought into the studio here, and I want to throw this out to you, and I'm not familiar with this at all. And I hope it is something that you feel is appropriate to ask you. But here's the question. Didn't the applicant, and I'm assuming this may be for Social Security, I'm not sure, didn't the applicant used to count on retro, R-E-T-R-O, money to make up income lost while awaiting an appeal process to play out? Question mark. Isn't there something akin today to a retro sum once the applicant's claim is accepted? Is this a term retro applicable to Social Security disability, Jim?
Yes, it is. And it comes from the fact that it takes Social Security a long time to process an application. Once an application is decided favorably, the claimant is paid as if the application should have been decided favorably the day it was filed.
Oh, really? So you get money from backed up money? Is that the idea?
Back payments.
But you could have lost your home in the meantime.
Well, that's the problem with why it takes so long.
Yeah.
And in fact, I've had a lot of clients say to me, never mind the retro benefits, just get this thing settled so that I have some form of sustainment rather than lose my house. Yes, retroactive benefits are payable not only back in time to the date of the application, but depending on the situation, up to a one-year period of time before the application. Imagine, for example, and let's put workers' comp aside and all of the considerations about whether it's a work-related injury, but someone who becomes sick, stops working, hopes to get better, has a little bit of savings, some relatives and friends that help, a working spouse, and they go 2 years down the line through medical treatment trying to get better and finally decide they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So they file a Social Security application. If that application is approved, they're entitled to benefits going back 1 year before they filed,
mm-hmm.
as long as they're filing for Social Security disability insurance
mm-hmm.
benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So the retroactive payment can be significant. It can amount to tens of thousands of dollars in some cases. But you usually have to wait a good 2 years before you're going to get it.
Scott, I know that prior to our program this evening that you and Jim have talked about this. There is a difference, is there not, with respect to the term disability used in workers' comp versus Social Security? What is the difference?
Well, in California, we describe disability starting with the word impairment. And impairment basically means the loss of ability or the impairment of a bodily function or a bodily movement. And we have a book called the AMA Guides, the fifth edition, for which every physician who evaluates an injured worker in California by law has to follow this book. And in this book, it gives impairment ratings based upon each part of the body, each section of the body, and each injury to the body. So, for example, someone who might have had a back injury, a physician would look to Chapter 15 of the AMA Guides, which is the spine chapter, and based upon the diagnosis, a physician would give an impairment rating. For example, in the diagnosis-related estimate for a lumbar spine disability, a physician can give an injured worker anywhere, depending on the severity of their injury, between a 0% impairment, which would be basically a full recovery, up to 28% impairment, which would be for someone who had the equivalent of a failed back or a severely compromised back. So each part of the body is determined by this book, the AMA Guides, and a physician must use this book to determine the impairment levels. And that's the starting point or basis for us coming up with a disability rating. Now, this impairment number, which a physician is, again, required to give based upon the AMA Guides, is then adjusted in California. And that number is adjusted by what's called a FEC modifier, future earning capacity modifier, which for injuries that occur on or after January 1, 2013, is a modifier of 1.4. So in other words, we take that number, whatever the physician is given, and we times it by 1.4, or 140%. And every state that uses AMA guides has a different modifier. In California, we've scheduled at 1.4. And then we take that number, and then we adjust it again based upon the person's occupation. So depending if you have a occupation that is arduous, we may adjust that number upward. If you have an occupation that's less arduous, we may adjust that number downward. And then finally, the person's disability or impairment number is adjusted one more time based upon their age. If you are over 39 years old, we adjust your impairment rating higher. And if you're under 39 years old, we adjust your impairment rating lower. The concept being that someone who's older probably has less resiliency to get back from an injury. So in other words, to make a long story short, a physician gives an impairment rating pursuant to a book called the AMA Guides. That impairment rating, which is set forth in this treatise, is then adjusted three times in the state of California, once statutorily 1.4, 140%, a second time based on the person's occupation, and a third time based upon the person's age. And that final number that's achieved becomes what we call their permanent disability rating. And that permanent disability rating, we have a corresponding chart in the state of California. It's called the permanent disability rating chart, which has a monetary value or a settlement number. So in other words, a person who starts with a number, say 10% on the back, gets adjusted times 1.4, would go to 14%. If they have an arduous position, we might adjust it up a couple more points, say to 17%. If they were in their 60s, it might adjust up again to 20%. That final number of 20%, we would go to the permanent disability rating chart, and there would be entitlement to compensation based upon that. And just for the record, in 2014, somebody who has a 20% permanent disability rating is entitled to $21,895, payable at the rate of $290 per week over the course of 75 and a half weeks. That's a long answer to your question, but that's basically how we determine disability and workers' compensation.
Is there a rating system, Jim, like this in Social Security disability? It sounds very complicated to me.
Yeah, nothing like that at all in Social Security. Disability in Social Security, in fact, doesn't even refer to a specific medical condition.
Uh-huh.
In Social Security, we think of disability as meaning any medical condition that more than minimally affects a person's ability to do basic work activity, standing, walking, sitting, thinking, staying on task, those kind of things. So what we look to in Social Security is neither the cause of the medical problem, not really, nor any sort of percentage of disability arising from it, but rather work restrictions. Mm-hmm. And then we match those work restrictions up to the demands of all sorts of work, not just the individual's prior work, although that's where they usually start. But even if an individual's unable to do his or her prior work, they still run into issues involving whether or not there's some other kind of work that they can do. If it's felt that there is some other kind of work they can do, then unfortunately they don't qualify.
Let me ask you both this, because we're just about ending of the statewide version of the program, which is recorded and then sent out to 15 other stations in California, which will air the half hour next week. Although for those of you listening to the live program, which we are doing on the evening of July 6th, we will continue for another half hour. But let me ask you this. If someone is injured, let's say in a work-related accident, is it important from the being really practical to protect yourself, generally speaking, that you should, if you are physically able to do it and competent enough to do it, to see both a workers' compensation specialist as well as a Social Security disability specialist, or is that just going too far?
Very quickly, Scott.
Yes or no?
I would say
this,
yes.
This is such a complicated system that I think, this is Scott talking, that I think that you have to have a workers' compensation attorney. In theory, you don't, but it's a very difficult system to navigate. I think you've just heard, as I described the permanent disability rating system, how
we have come to the end of the half hour. I'm going to have to interrupt you. All right, everybody, this is Your Legal Rights. It is right now 27 minutes and a few seconds after 7 Pacific time for those of you. Our toll-free number, in case you'd like to call in, ask a question, make a comment with my guests, is 866-798-8255. Again, that's toll-free, 866-798-8255. If you'd like to call in with either a Social Security disability question or a workers' compensation question, please feel free to do so. If you've tuned in a little bit late, my guests are James Shea, a specialist in Social Security disability laws, certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. His office is in Los Angeles. My other guest is Scott Ford, a specialist in workers' compensation laws, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. He's a partner in the Los Angeles law firm of Ford and Wallach. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and now Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar Association, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone for you who's experienced in the area of your problem. They'll set you up for half an hour consultation with minor percentage problems. You will pay for half an hour consultation between $25 and $35. It's a great way to start to educate yourself. By the way, if you are looking for a certified specialist, whether it's workers' compensation or Social Security disability or whatever, you can start by contacting the website for the State Bar of California, www.calbar.ca.gov. You can go to legal specialists and find out who the certified specialist is in your area. National Board of Trial Advocacy is also certified through the Board of Legal Specialization, so you can find out who the certified specialists are with respect to Social Security disability or Social Security through the State Bar's website. And let me just say one other thing here before we continue. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. One further thing for those of you in the Bay Area, there is going to be, and I want to give this to you because you might find this very valuable for you, there is going to be a program at the County Bar Library, actually in Redwood City by the San Mateo County Law Library. Home improvement contracts, what to do. You'll learn how to negotiate a clear contract, believe it or not, I hope. You can learn about your rights and responsibilities. This is going to be on Thursday, July 14th at the San Mateo County Law Library at noon. It's a free program to you, anyone who would like to go to it. You can bring your bag lunch and have your lunch at the library. And it's located at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. That's 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. And the law library number, if you like more information, is 650-369-4913. 650-363-4913. Let's start with John. John of Hayward. Welcome to the program, John.
Hi, how you guys doing today?
All right, you go ahead with your question.
Okay, my question is I've worked construction. I'm 44. It's been a long time. I worked for a real long time, and my knees are just gone. They're shot. My question is if you've been off for work for a while, for like 4 or 5 years, can you come back later on down the line and say, hey, I want to claim some type of disability? Since there's been so much time off, I'm wondering, is there some repercussion or something I can do later down the line that I could come back to this and somehow find my way back either into the workforce or in disability.
John, let me ask you a question. In that your knees, you say, are gone and have been apparently gone for now 4 or 5 years, did you not claim to have a work-related injury with respect to your knees? In other words, you didn't apply for workers' comp or not?
You know what? It was one of those things where you didn't want to. You know the owner of the company. It was almost like the guys that did it almost were blacklisted in the trades that
Ooh,
did it.
Wow.
So if all of a sudden you just came out and said, hey, I'm claiming disability on you or on your employer, it just looked really, really bad. So basically, I kind of held it to myself. I work construction where it would just required me, like, you know, to, you know, climbing ladders all day, and I'm on my knees operating chop saws and everything. So when the pain got so much and it just got so bad, I just threw in the flag and just said, hey, I'm going to take some time off, see if I can just rehabilitate this myself. And I guess quite stupidly, I didn't really go down this route. Just I don't want to say being a nice guy or being, you know, being one of those guys where you just didn't want to do that. And
let me get
hindsight, when I look back at it, I should have did this. I should have went down this road.
Yeah,
with regret, yeah. I'm sitting here where I could just barely walk.
Let me get some comments for you, John, if you turn your radio back up. Do either Scott or Jim, do you have questions
sure,
at all for John?
I'll start. First of all, let me start with a sort of a brief.
Yeah,
brief
John, turn your radio back up so you can hear this. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, there's two types of injuries in workers' compensation. Generally, there's what's called a specific injury, where I'm climbing up a ladder and I fall down. I've had a specific injury. On a certain day, I injured myself. The second type of injury in workers' compensation is what it sounds like the caller is describing, is more of what we call a cumulative injury, or we call it a cumulative trauma. That's an injury that occurs over time, and the work itself, there's not one specific day that causes the injury, but really it's a series of micro-traumas, the day in, the day out. The most classic example of a cumulative trauma would be, in addition to the knees that we're talking about right now, would be like a carpal tunnel claim.
Yeah.
It wasn't caused on a day, but it was caused over many days. Mm-hmm. So in both types of claims, there's a statute of limitations. And a statute of limitations is a time limit in which someone is required to file a claim within that time period. When you don't file a claim within the time period, the statute of limitation, the claim may be barred at a later time.
What's the statute of limitation?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What is the period of the statute of limitations in workers' comp?
Right, that's what I was going to describe. That for a specific injury, generally the statute of limitations would be within a year of the date of injury.
One year?
Same would be 1 year. The same would be true for a cumulative trauma injury, with the exception that when you're dealing with cumulative trauma injuries, it's 1 year from the date of knowledge of the injury or the date that the person understands there's been an injury.
Mm-hmm.
So often what happens in a cumulative injury, people don't really realize they're being injured because it's something that happens gradually over time. So if in the caller's situation, if you had this injury that developed over time, it was cumulative in nature, and you weren't really sure it was work-related, arguably, the statute of limitations may not expire until, or may not even arise until you come to the conclusion that, hey, this might be a work-related injury. If you left work and you knew at the time you left work it was a work-related injury, that may be a harder issue for you to pursue it on those grounds.
From the worker's standpoint, Scott, in light of John's telling us, now he's still a relatively young man, age 44. He says that he's been out of work now for 4 or 5 years. Obviously, it sounds like to me, and I don't want to put the kibosh on any claim he might have, but it sounds like to me, as far as workers' compensation application is concerned, he's beyond the statute of limitations.
Not necessarily.
Oh, really?
It would be much more challenging for him to file that claim based on the length of time. But that's why I took a couple minutes to explain that what a cumulative injury was, and that it's basically the date that you have knowledge and an understanding that your injuries were work-related is the day that the statute of limitations begins to run in a workers' comp claim. Now, I think what he said was that while he was working, he knew it was work-related, and he just didn't want to report it.
Uh-huh.
I think that makes it doesn't make the statute impossible, but I think it makes it much more challenging for him.
Yeah, yeah. Would you, in your specialty, certified specialty as a workers' compensation attorney, Scott, would you recommend now to John that it would be worth it for him? He lives in Hayward, as I understand it. Would it be worth it to him to contact go to the State Bar's website under Legal Specialists and see who the certified specialists in workers' comp are in Alameda County and see if he can make an appointment to have an initial consultation, or is that perhaps overdoing it?
No, I think it's worth exploring. Again, we talked about the difference between a cumulative injury and a specific injury. You know, that in workers' compensation, money never changes hands between the injured worker and the attorney directly. Attorneys are paid on a contingency fee basis. So any consultation that you set up with a workers' compensation attorney will be at no charge to you. I think that if you want to explore your rights and see what you may be or may not be entitled to, there's no reason why you shouldn't set up an appointment with a specialist. Again, I think the statute is going to be challenging based on the facts that you've given me, but I don't think that it's basically you're barred from pursuing this claim. I think it's worth it.
John, if you have a pen or pencil handy and a piece of paper, I'm going to give you some information. It's my suggestion that you contact the California Board of Legal Specialization. Here's the statewide number, 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. Or go to the, if you have a computer available to you, go to the CalBAR, State Bar's website, www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the left of the screen to Legal Specialist, put in your county, and find the certified specialist for workers' comp and see if you can't make an appointment. It's not going to cost you anything, as Scott has just said, and it's a great way of trying to determine whether or not you should live the rest of your life with a regret, or maybe there's something that can be done at this point. What about Social Security disability, Jim, for John under these circumstances?
You know, listening to his description of his situation, he said, I can hardly walk.
Yeah, sounds terrible.
My experience with people who've worked construction for many years and who have really bad knees such that they can hardly walk is he's not going back to construction work.
No, not at all.
So really the question in his mind and in a Social Security attorney's mind is, do you realistically think that you're going to work again? Is there something else you can think that you might want to do?
And that you can do. And that you can.
And, people will say to me, I'm willing to try a lot of things. And people, I think, would rather work than be disabled.
Sure,
I've had seriously disabled people take up study as a nurse's assistant, which mm-hmm. is fairly physically demanding work. But they want to help people, they want to contribute, and they don't want to think they're not going to be working for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Now, John's problem here, he said it's been 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
Let's assume a couple of things. Number one, that he's not able to return to construction work. And number two, that those knees are so bad that for all practical purposes, he is, I don't want to say bed-bound, but certainly sedentary-bound.
Mm-hmm. Even with knee operations? Is there any potential there?
Social Security looks at the way the person is now.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, maybe there will be some kind of treatment that can fix them, but Social Security doesn't get into that.
Yeah.
Okay. What can a person afford? What medical resources do they have available? Those are important concerns mm-hmm. for any individual, but Social Security looks at the person's ability to work as they stand in front of the administration when they file that application.
Jim, this is Scott. Is there a statute on the Social Security disability application?
It's not actually a statute, but there is what we think of as a date last insured. They call it Social Security disability insurance benefits for a reason. It acts like an insurance policy. And you pay the premiums on that policy by working and paying Social Security taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Once you stop working, you stop paying those premiums.
Yeah.
And at a certain point in time, an alarm is going to go off and the policy is going to lapse. That's what we call the date last insured. Now, even if John is past his date last insured, he could still file a viable application, but his burden of proof would be to prove that his knee conditions got so bad that he was completely prevented from working before his date last insured. He has to show, in other words, that his condition became disabling before his insured status expired.
Ah, okay.
And his insured status will generally expire 5 years after he stops working.
Oh, really?
That's not true in every case, but that's a good rule of thumb.
Do you think that John also at this point should seek the advice of a Social Security disability attorney such as yourself?
Well, I think what he should be seeking the advice on is important. Number one, is my condition so disabling that the Social Security Administration will regard me as completely unable to work?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then number two, what is my insured status?
Mm-hmm.
If I file now, How far back in time do I have to go to prove my disability, or do I still have some time left of insured status? Those are important technical questions that should be answered only by somebody who really knows what they're talking about and knows where to go find out the information, and that would be a Social Security disability attorney, yes.
How would John find a Social Security disability attorney? How do you find someone like
well,
that?
Well, you know, one of the suggestions I'd make is the same one you made a few moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
The State Bar Association allows you to search every attorney in the state by specialization.
Yes.
And it so happens that Social Security disability is one of the State Bar areas of specialization they recognize, so you can find a good attorney that way.
So that's the John, I hope you have gotten this, so that there, in my opinion, as being the host here and someone who's been a lawyer for a long, long time and a consumer advocate, I think it's worth it for you to become more aggressive as a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should try to make an appointment to meet with a specialist in workers' compensation, and also, as Jim has just said, make an appointment, find a Social Security attorney who is involved. Not all Social Security attorneys deal with disabilities, do they, Jim?
No.
So find a, through the State Bar's website, find a Social Security disability attorney also who you can sit down and talk with and see if there is some potential for yourself. For those of you who have other questions in the area of either workers' compensation or Social Security disability, our toll-free number again is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Again, that is toll-free. Please don't wait for another 5 or 6 minutes, because we'll nearly be off the air, and that wouldn't make any sense. There are so many things between the fields that both of you are in that we haven't even touched upon. We have a few minutes left in that we don't have anyone else waiting to talk to you at this point. Scott, is there any other area that you would like to touch upon in the next few minutes?
Sure. You know, one of the things that Jim said earlier, which I thought was really interesting, was he said that in Social Security, we don't really care about what the cause of the problem is. I think they focus more on what the overall level of inability to work is. And in workers' compensation, cause is the number one issue we look at.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I mentioned before, the employer's only responsible for the part of the disability that they caused. And what happens often in a workers' compensation claim is that somebody is provided a disability rating, like I described earlier in the show, and then that disability rating is reduced by the percentage of the non-work-related problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, let's say somebody had a bad back, and a doctor had found them to be 50% disabled, but they'd come to the job with a bad back. They had a bad back as a child, or that they had a arthritis that was progressed that wasn't work-related. We might take their disability rating and cut it in half.
Mm-hmm.
We'd take away from it the part that wasn't work-related. That would diminish what they were entitled to in terms of a workers' comp settlement by law. However, that same person with that larger level of disability that they can't recoup entirely through the workers' compensation system takes that whole package of how disabled they are and goes and sees somebody like Jim Shea, who then looks at the whole person and doesn't look at causation. And that's a major difference between the two systems, even though we're dealing with the same individual.
I might add to that, you were speaking earlier, Scott, about these ratings resulting in a percentage. And I think oftentimes people think of that as meaning a percentage of disability. I have people come into my office and they say, well, I've been rated 28% disabled. Does that mean I don't qualify for Social Security? They have the sense that Social Security means 100% disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And these ratings really don't cross over to Social Security. Mm-hmm. A person can be qualified for Social Security and have a disability rating of 20% mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in workers' comp. And conversely, somebody who has an 80% disability rating in workers' comp might not qualify, depending on the situation, for Social Security. So these ratings are not to be understood as percentages of disability in the general sense of the term.
That's an excellent point. In theory, although it's extraordinarily rare, a person could be 100% disabled under the workers' compensation system and still working. I've settled many cases in my career and tried many cases where I've had very high disability ratings in the 70 or 80% range where the person continues to work. And it's because the permanent disability rating, just like Jim says, is not an indication of your disability, but it's a mathematical formula beginning with your level of impairment. Some levels of impairment, for example, you could have a significantly large level of impairment for a heart condition, but that heart condition may not preclude you from doing your usual and customary work. It might afford you an entitlement to benefits under the workers' compensation system without impairing your ability to work. And also I'd like to make a point that many of the people that I represent continue working. They either don't miss time from work or they go back to work quickly or as quickly as they can, and they're still afforded permanent disability ratings. The fact that you have a disability rating doesn't mean you're unable to work. And that's the major difference between what Jim does and what I do in terms of workers' comp versus Social Security, is that his standard is, are you able to work? Whereas mine, the disability rating and work are not necessarily correlated together.
Let me get something also clear with respect to you, Jim. Scott has informed us that the only way that a workers' compensation attorney gets paid is by a contingency when the court awards, or the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board awards an award. How is a Social Security disability attorney compensated? If, for example, John wanted to come and see you and discuss this, would you be charging, generally speaking, would you or another Social Security disability attorney be charging him an hourly fee or what?
Well, no, we wouldn't. Like workers' compensation attorneys, we don't charge fees unless we manage to obtain benefits for the claimant. But there's another important thing to be said about fees in my field, and that is that Social Security regulates them and must approve them.
Uh-huh.
So even though I won't charge someone for a consultation, I never do, and even though I might be entitled to charge a fee if I win that person's case and get them disability benefits, Social Security is going to look at the fee I intend to charge, and they have to say in writing that it is a fee I'm entitled to charge.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, I can't charge it no matter what I do and what I did.
Well, that I think that's good.
I do too.
I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased to hear that. We have the one more call, and it's Susan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was wondering, I have Social Security disability, and I wondered, is there some place online that I could do some research about now that gay people can get married? I wondered, like, how it impacts my disability. Should I get married to somebody?
May I ask a couple of questions? You said you're on Social Security disability. Are you on Social Security disability insurance benefits as a result of your work history?
Yes, and I have so many health issues right now, so that's why I'm on it.
Okay, well, there's two things to be said about that. Number one, your financial status does not affect your entitlement to disability insurance benefits. You can be Donald Trump and still qualify for those benefits.
Okay.
Number two, if you get married, it does not affect them at all.
Oh, okay.
Now, the same cannot be said of persons who are receiving supplemental security income benefits or SSI benefits. That's a different program. And also individuals who are disabled adult children who are receiving benefits as on the earnings record of a parent since before they were 22 years old. Such persons, if they get married, lose their entitlement to those benefits. So make sure when you understand my answer that we're referring to disability insurance benefits, okay?
Okay.
Does that help you, Susan?
Yeah. And, you know, it's like a website. Should I look just at the Social Security website or?
It's the best one available to you, ssa.gov, G-O-V. You can get a lot of information from them, and they have a search function. Type in marriage and disability, and you'll get something.
So the website is what again?
www.ssa, Social Security Administration, ssa.gov as in Victor, gov.
There you are, Susan.
Okay.
Good
Thank
luck.
You.
Let us
Thank
know.
You.
Let us know when you're getting married, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much for calling. We have about a minute and a half left of the program. Let me give you again what I think is very important to you, both the phone number as well as the website for the Board of Legal Specialization, which has a partnership with the National Board of Trial Advocacy with respect to the various specialties that are available, certified specialties. The statewide number for the California Board of Legal Specialization is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. The website is www.calbar.ca.gov, www.calbar.ca.gov. And go to Legal Specialists, and either the phone number or going to the website will help you to find specialists in terms of what you may need, including whether it's workers' comp or Social Security disability or a bunch of others that are available to you. So it's a very fine thing to know that you have this available to you if you need it. So I hope you don't need it, but it's available. I want to thank you both very much for joining us on the program. It's been a great pleasure to have you. We've only kind of touched on the surface here. Jim Shea, great to have you.
Thank you.
Specialist in Social Security Disability Law, certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. His office is in Los Angeles. And Scott Ford, specialist in workers' compensation laws, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His firm is Ford and Wallach in Los Angeles. Thank you also, Scott.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you on the program. Next time on Your Legal Rights, we'll have a family law program on the legal representation of minor children in family court when there's been a dispute over custody or visitation. My guests will be family law attorneys and members of the State Bar's Family Law Section's Executive Committee, Alexandra O'Neill Muller and B.J. Fathom. So that's available to you next week. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thanks for listening to us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you listen to us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.